Okay, hello, Ion.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Well, I got Brian here. He has a question.
What does that G stand for in the Masonic symbol?
Reference to the deity.
Under just plain God or some other secret name that can't be said or something?
Well, it's more for the square, not really a G. It's the plumb and square.
I ask as I read someone's interpretation. Seemed like a clever one, and that maybe someone meant that, if it wasn't what it really meant. But maybe it's one of the levels of what they teach or something. They're saying that, well, you got the compass, and compasses are used to draw circles, which could also be orbits, and that it's not just a compass in a square, but the square is upside down. It's an inverted square, and so that the inverted square in orbits refers to Newtonian gravity. Which I thought was interesting, but it seemed a little maybe simple to be the correct answer. But
it is a little bit simple, and it is a little bit clever, and it's not quite the right answer, but it's an answer. It comes from the east and west and back again.
Well, that's the other thing, is this person was saying, you know, we're told it means God or geometry, but really I think it means this. And then I was thinking, like, well, if it does mean that, and G is this more unified field, then that is God and geometry. So it doesn't really disprove those meanings, it just flushes them out.
Short version, layman got fucked up, that's all it's about.
Layman's the guy who got killed, or he did the murder? He was accused of the murder, or he got killed?
Hamish.
Yeah, but layman, what did layman do in the myth?
He was the one that was falling away to dead.
So the G in the Masonic icon, is that referred to the human as God? Did they go that far?
It's the plumb and square version of ascension.
That means visual space. That means going someplace.
Well, maybe acoustic space, but that's relative now,
okay.
Isn't it?
Acoustic space is where there's centers everywhere and margins nowhere. That's Blade
Pascal's
definition.
That's the well, that's the focus, and that's what they're trying to say.
They don't take it to themselves creating the world, though. They don't go that far.
Well, they don't really care.
They don't care, or you don't care?
They don't care because they don't know.
418 group is a little more ascended than Freemasons, if you can generalize.
Ooh, we don't generally.
You can't generally.
Well, generally, it ends up in a mess.
Is there a particular? Is there such a thing as a particular versus a general?
A driven one, yes.
A driven one. That speaks for everybody?
Can speak to everybody. You're getting lost. You're going to say it's too many words, and you don't know what the hell you're even talking about. Ask the question.
Has Masons now, or some winter of the... Whatever is the best or most knowledgeable, least degraded version of the Masons, do they still know whatever they used to know, whether or not that was ever the best thing to know or the truest? Like,
no,
has there
no,
been a
they don't
degrading?
Know. They still don't know. They don't know. Now it's more right. It's all the ritual. It's a direction, a place you can't get anywhere to or from. So it's all fun. It's lost in the oligarch took it up the ass again.
Ion, the songs that we listen to a lot that you recommend often are singing about putting God outside of us. I'm a little confused by that because I've just gotten used to and in love with the fact that I am God and I am in my power. But when Vestal's singing about God's walking around in the hills at night and hurting all for us to help us, it's very confusing to me. Can you explain the reason that these songs that you recommend are talking about?
It's the same way that the church says that you're lost and undone. It's the little man's version. It's to remind you that there's hope, that there's a way, that there's a connection point. That is the point. Now, when you get that, then of course you got it. Great, wonderful, congratulations. But there are those who don't, you see. And this is a reminder. Everything brings you back into your place. That reminds you when you weren't. And so you can be comforted in the knowing that response, maybe helping somebody else who doesn't get it. It's like, God, help my belief. Now help my unbelief.
Yeah. Okay.
And you're the God that's asking.
I looked up the words Planeta Mondu, which led me to Vincent de Beauvais. I've been researching him as well as the various possible definitions for Agar, as you instructed me, but I need some help. Please tell me the reason for my research in Agar and Vincent de Beauvais.
It's the thickening agent. It's the agar that allows something to grow. It's a definer that allows you to have a juxtaposable position that allows something to beget that is there, but you can't pick it out.
And what about Vincent de Beauvais?
Look deeper.
The problem is that most of his work is still in Latin and is being translated in English as we speak, and there is also some work into French being done right now. I've spent a week on it, and I'm going nowhere.
There are some canticles in en français that are medium pau-mau, but not terrible.
Diane, that was interesting that Ian brought that up last week, or whenever, a couple weeks ago, and there was a connection to McLuhan. That's what you told me the other day, right?
What I sent you, yes.
So what was the connection to McLuhan? Did he know about him or write about him?
The work I sent you by Frederick Kaplan, he linked McLuhan and Vincent de Beauvais in an essay, as well as Francine Gagnon did the same thing, naming them both in a way encyclopedist.
Slipidist? What was the last word?
Encyclopedist. I'm sorry.
They're both encyclopedists.
Well, in a way.
Yeah, is de Beauvais dead or alive? When did he live?
De Beauvais was born in 1191 and died in 1264.
And there are people looking, presenting his works now.
He was the one who wrote, read and recorded the very first encyclopedia of the Middle Ages. And it's still intriguing a lot of people to this day.
So, Ian, did you mention this to Diane because she's in Montreal? Was that the French angle you were taking, or had nothing to do with her location?
It had nothing to do with her location.
It's just appropriate for her.
You told Bob last week that there is something that I would not believe. Tell me, and I'm sure I will know, never mind believe, or don't you think I can handle the knowledge?
Book of Shadows, the great work of Trevorkian.
The Book of Shadows, that's the Ninth Gate movie. Ian, am I right? That's the right book?
Well, it is the right book, but I think the book came a little bit before the movie.
But that's a reference point. That was the biggest banned book like 300 years ago. You might want to look that up. Look up the movie, The Ninth Gate, and then the Kevorkia weird name. The guy who wrote it was an interesting character for his day.
Would you also tell me what it is you think I would not believe?
Watch the movie.
Are you French-Canadian, Diane?
Yes, I was born French.
How did you hear of us?
In 2009, I was reading a book in which Carolyn was mentioned, her book, Dead by Modern Medicine, was mentioned in it, and
right.
That's when I researched her, and I started receiving her blog every week, and then the words RNA drops came up, and then I knew that that was for me.
Would that book be, what's the woman in France who in Quebec?
No, the book was, at the time, it was Shirley MacLaine's last book.
Oh, yeah, Shirley MacLaine, that's right, the actress. But I'm thinking of, what was that woman who really got in trouble, has a French name, Carol, back then?
Lancto.
Lancto.
She did vein surgery, but then she got into alternatives. Let me see.
Was she in Montreal?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she got in real trouble. I think they even tried to arrest her, right?
Ghislaine Langteau.
Have you ever heard of her, Diane?
No, I could look it up, though, but no, she doesn't know about.
She authored, many years after Death by Modern Medicine, I think, but she authored Medical Mafia, and she got into a lot of trouble because she wrote it when she was in Canada. I wrote Death by Modern Medicine in the States and hid.
Hid, that's right, on City Island, and Ghislaine got in trouble.
She hid in plain sight.
And then she got nailed. Carolyn hid in plain sight, do you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, Carolyn did. Shirley MacLaine, did she ever find out about the drops, Ion?
She did.
So she kept up on Carolyn.
Mm-hmm. She was competing with Esther Hicks.
Mm-hmm. For
what? Fame and notoriety.
Had she ever experienced the Abrahams? Had she gone and listened to them?
I think they went to listen to her.
I sleep very poorly due to a sinus problem and need all the sleep I can get. Please identify the problem and give advice, Ion.
You don't have a sinus problem. The reason you're sweating is because you're sleeping too much. Get out and do something. Wear yourself out. And when you wear yourself out, your sinuses will clear. So if you get on the supplements, the complements, and increase your the electrolyte formula just a little bit, it'll help.
Okay.
She's already on the drops. You have something extra
on
to say about it?
Increase the electrolyte formula.
Okay.
To relay.
Well, thank you.
If that doesn't work, add a little gin and juice.
Diane, just ask a question about Rennie Levesque or FLQ.
Oh, God.
You know, Quebec separatism.
The thing is, I was raised in French until I married at the age of 19, and I've been married for 42 years this year, and I'm in English. Because the sound of the French Quebec language irritates my ears and my nerves. So to the point I cannot speak it. It's not really French, it's a patois.
A patois.
Yeah, and it grates.
It is. It's very irritating because it goes against what you know is first nature. Come on, Bob. This is LaRouche 101. It's the egg in the William Merwin Thompson quadrant. No one can live there long.
Are you saying you were born in France?
No. I was born to French-Canadian parents. And I went
when did you get turned off to their accent?
In 1970. With the FLQ.
But you were French. But you were married to.
I have
the transition.
I have a reason, and I was absolutely horrified at what these people did. They killed a man just to prove a point.
So you got allergic to your own native language?
No, I got allergic to it when my parents moved us to Shawinigan, which was even worse. Outside of Montreal, the accent is awful, 10 times worse. And then I came back to Montreal to study, and I went to
even has a twang, and a ridiculous twang, worse than old Elizabethan South.
Anglicisms. They would say an English word with a French accent, thinking this was proper. When we moved there, we needed a dictionary to figure out what they were saying, and they were speaking French.
Another part of mais amis.
Oh, please, that would be nice. No, it's awful. Then we moved to another part of Quebec, and it was a whole new dictionary. Couldn't understand a word either.
Tribal.
Well, that's because the Quebec, Diane, did not have a 19th century. They went from the 18th century into the 20th century, McClellan used to point out. They still had their decentralized accents. They weren't uniformized by the newspaper or print world.
But you see, in Shawinigan and La Mauricie, in general and particular, it's not just the accent, it's the way they think. And we have a saying here, if ever you hear it's the end of the world, move over there because they're 20 years behind.
The way they talk, it creates the way they think. That's what Sapir and Whorf, those professors, came up with. That was the early version of the medium as the message. It is their accent is leads to their language, to their thoughts.
Actually, I was listening to one of your show, Hera. I think she's from Norway.
Hera.
She lived in Grand-Mère for a while, which is twin city to Shawinigan, so she would understand how far behind they are, because the companies in marketing, they test products in La Mauricie, and they say if it takes off there, it'll take off all over Quebec. I'm not kidding.
They're stuck in their ways. I think Hera.
You remember
Sweden.
Okay.
Yes,
do you remember Jean Chrétien?
Jean Chrétien.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's from Shawinigan. How he got out of there, I don't know.
Tilted mouth. He was the prime minister with a weird, rough accent.
Scorching of the ears, I tell you.
Well, I'm sorry you resemble us in that way.
In what way?
Oh, we hate stupid people. We get mad.
Well, it's not so much stupid, but like, they don't want to explore. I have to get out of there.
That's what I mean. They don't want to explore. That's the definition of stupidity. I've met a lot of intelligent people with great accents who are stupid because they won't explore.
Well, there's that too. It's not just a question of the language. It's a question of the way they think. And in Montreal, at least, we're a little bit more open than that, but it's going to be a while. And it's not just a language issue that the problem is here in Quebec. It's a question of the way they think and refuse to move forward.
Yeah. They're just like European France. They can't stand McDonald's or Disney.
No, they're just like doctors.
Asian Indian doctors and everybody else that immigrates here and adopts the Western bullshit.
Yeah.
And they become fanatics.
Yes, I did,
they don't like ions. What, Ion?
Death by dead doctors.
Death by dead doctors. So, Diane, in Montreal, there's a general stagnation there. Even Croakers. The Croakers left Quebec and Montreal and went to British Columbia. The last exciting period in Montreal was when we were there in 1968. That was a great year. And then the separatism started. And by 1970, they had that martial law, and they never recovered.
It was the day they drove old Dixie down.
The whites of West Virginia, Ion. To tackle the whites of West Virginia, boy, they're a tough gag. See that documentary if anybody's listening. Go ahead, Diane.
Quebec started a long time ago.
Morgantown.
Oh, that's right. They only got separatists, because they already were separatists, and when radio came into their homes in the 40s and 50s through the CBC, and then they said, holy shit, there's this English language right inside our separatist ass, and so they had to make it official that they were separate. But they already were, technically. But radio brought them into the English home.
Then you found a gluten-free galaxy, and it's never been the same since.
So, Diane, was that the common sentiment among people at that separatist act, where they killed whoever
no.
they killed?
No.
Are you saying the majority of Quebecois were outraged at the FLQ, Carol? That's what you're asking?
Yeah.
Well, not the way I think, obviously, because in 1976, 6 years after, the Parti Québécois won the elections, and they won in power. Part of my family were for them, part wasn't.
Sounds like it's about 50-50, right?
I wouldn't say 50-50, more like 80% of the province is pro-French. Parti Québécois maybe not, but pro-French definitely. And the ones outside of Montreal don't really understand that English is needed in order to breathe, because the whole world, for business anyway, it's English. And the kind of the way they think, let's say at work, the people from the States, the branch office in the States, comes over and for a presentation. Well, after the presentation, they will bitch that it was not in French. But these people are from the United States. You cannot have for the deaf, as somebody who's going to mime the words in French for them. I mean, you cannot have an instant translator right there in the room. It will take like forever to have the conference over. But
so
the
French have gotten worse.
Some of them.
Well, that's what Marshall McLuhan said. We'd get decentralization, would be retrieved. The uniformity of the newspaper era would die with television. and electronic media. It would retrieve the tribal sensibilities that Quebec already had, make them even more stubborn.
At this point, it's probably much more the older generations who will stick their feet in, and when the young ones realize the importance of speaking English. The problem is that here in Quebec, if you emigrate, you have to send your children to French school. And in the French school, they don't teach you English until grade 5. I swear to God, Bob, in grade 8, my teacher was 4 foot nothing, and she was our geography teacher. And she was stuck with teaching us English, but she didn't know English. So because she was too short, she would ask me to write it on the blackboard and translate the whole thing as I went. I could have had her salary that year. And my sister was stuck 1 year over me. My sister was stuck with one who would pronounce, we walk, we talk, and she would correct her. For 1 year, she corrected the teacher. So when I graduated the previous grade, she saw my name on her list, and she went to the director, and she said, there's no way I'm teaching another one of those from that family. So they had me take an exam, and I passed it with 98%, and from grade 8, I went to grade 12 English. I learned it by myself with the Beatles.
What advice does non-physical give to the Quebecois people in general, other than that you don't care and they don't care?
It was the loudest conversation I ever had with a deaf mute.
That's what you would advise a Quebecois. The loudest conversation you can ever have is with a deaf mute. Is it significant, these linguistic issues, Ian, as we move into the post-boiling point being changed world we're in now?
Well, see, the problem when people don't talk right is they don't write right. If they don't write right, how do you know that the one that wrote the reading right? So in some forms, they might be on to something, but in the rest of the forms, no one else would notice. So it's a glib cliche archetype, once again, of that which you can't know.
Boy, that was pretty good post-grad, talking to 1%er accent there you had, Ian. Can't even be translated what you said. Very welcome, anybody who wants to.
I'm going to have to listen to it again to find out what he said.
He did quote McLuhan's cliched archetype. I recognize that. But there was a couple of prepositions there that didn't indicate which way he was going, and then after, which way he went. We have that problem a lot with Ian.
So it would be in a past blues perfect tense?
Yeah, the one sense nobody can get. Because it already happened.
And the crowd erupts with elation.
So you have no idea, Ian, to present to the people lost in their decentralized tribal dialects? You have nothing to comfort them?
Absence might be nice.
Absence from them in relation to us, or they in relation to anybody else?
Absent.
The drink.
Ion, did the President Putin order the murder of Boris Nemtsov?
No.
Is that like a subliminal smear, that campaign against him that people are putting out saying, well, he's usually behind all his opponents' deaths, so it's a smear campaign by whom?
A, B, C, D, E, S, G, A, T, G, A, N, O, P.
The alphabet soup agencies?
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, very clever.
Well, too clever by half.
Well, it seemed to me like a pretty simple way to, it's like, hey, we got this propaganda war against this guy. Let's knock off one of his opponents, and everyone will think it was him. And pretty easy way to demonize him.
Did this happen this week? Is this a new story?
Oh, Bob is so clever. Yeah, he's just one. It's all about Bob getting the boron and the iridium out of that little province, and once he gets that, he'll dash the rest of the whole thing to hell like it's something significant that he wants there. And now he says, did something happen in Russia this week? He's only known for about 2 months before he sold his Gazprom, but this is even more known. All the hell is giggling. giggling all the way to the corrupt banks that follow the left and right of it. It was too much fun.
Mm-hmm. It's all pretty accurate.
Ion, you always mention that it's all in the palms of our hands.
Katy Perry agrees, too.
I keep looking at the palm of my hands thinking there must be something there that is simple once you tell us that we will be able to see something, because you've said it so much.
Sure. Your skin is getting more elastic. Your skin is tougher, more resilient, but yet the skin, the dermis itself, is thinner. It's a thinner layer, but it's more thick. Take a lancet or a needle and try to poke it. It's nothing to see anymore.
It won't what anymore?
It's more of a feat to poke it, to pierce anymore.
Okay, I'll have to try that, because visually I can't tell if it's doing thinner or thicker or more elastic.
I need to get a tin buddy. That'll do it for you.
Ion, in the past, I've had a couple anomalies where I've seen relatives that have passed away driving on the highway. This happened with a great uncle and a grandfather. And not too long ago, I seen a version of my mother driving, who looked 10-15 years younger. Could you explain this?
There is no time, so sometimes you have levels that match up. You're slipping back in the future. So that's what happened.
With the triangulation experiment I just tried, was there any accurate calculations to come out of that?
Did you triangulate the position?
Yes. We found three points, three different worlds.
Okay.
We just don't know what to do with the information.
Rather interesting. Do it again. Cross-check it. Go to the third point and run it backwards. See if you landed the same world. If you do, okay.
Excellent.
Kevin, I don't think you have access to the triangulation formula, so what the heck do you think you're doing? It requires a special debriefing. So what are you basing your efforts on?
A squared, B squared, C squared.
Nah, it's
Pythagorean theorem.
So complicated. It's ridiculous.
Bob, he's not using astroglide, he's just using spit.
Is that enough?
Let him triangulate a bit, because postulation can be done. Some people naturally postulate, so he may be able to. That's righteous enough. But if you can redo it, you can recreate it. Okay, fine. If you can't, then you'll ask more questions. It's easy enough.
We threw in a little law cosine, and we were getting some figures, but, yeah, I'll try to recreate it. Thank you.
Do you buy into Ion's saying about all of this stuff that's changing, like boiling point changing, oxygen diminishing, ushering in more carbon, more radiation, or H-197?
Specifically, which part of H-197 are you not seeing increased in the planet as you know it?
Ask the question again.
They
I'm not
have
getting your
changed the amount of radiation that'll kill you. They've doubled it because the radiation in your planet has increased so that you now have a tolerance to it. And we said this is increasing, but your numbers have been doubled. We didn't double them. It's just what's
right.
happening.
Okay.
So there's nothing really to buy into. It's that the number of rads it takes to kill you has doubled, so that's newsworthy. But you'll have to call Lewis Rukhauser for the real full effects of the market.
Brian Taylor, what do you say to that? He's saying that you just need to look at the statistics and you would see these changes are happening.
Right, well, I haven't. That would be definitely, yeah, I mean, that I would look into it. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people would probably assume about Ion or whatever that it's like the classic unfalsifiable or something. They're like, oh, yeah, it's a bunch of baffle gab or something. And if it
sometimes assholes are also whole asses, so it's all relative.
So there's a falsifiable prediction right there. Or not necessarily a prediction, but, yeah, you could go find out about that. Off the top of my head, it reminds me of kind of an important point for a certain background that I won't get into to take time to dredge up the real reason.
The problem with mediatology is it doesn't have a sphincter.
You know, Brian, you know, Karl Popper came up with the falsibility bullshit. That was 50 years ago. Academic science had to come up with a fucking paradoxical statement to cover the fact that they were obsolete. Completely, their explanations were obsolete. So they came up with a backwards thing. Okay, we have to be wrong before we're real science.
It has to be possible that we're wrong.
That was a diplomatic compromise, the fact that they were completely wrong.
It's just to go about to unprove creation. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
To unprove creation. If it's created, they don't study that. It's got to be uncreated.
Yeah, and time invariant, you know, that like if it's true that
in stasis,
now it'll
actually time and stasis,
okay.
Time and stasis,
yeah.
Time and
time
stasis.
And, no, time in stasis.
In stasis. That's pre-literate society, time and stasis, or is that the dark age of the Gutenberg phase?
They are melding.
You're saying that's the situation now. Time and stasis.
Dupe.
All right.
How the dupe scientists view time?
That would be why the guff has stopped emptied, Ion, because time is in stasis. Even the death process is in stasis now, right?
Dupe.
What's the stasis? Isn't this what you talked about last week, a few weeks ago, stasis?
It's dark matter. It's the iconic... in touch with everything. If everything is simultaneous, then there's nowhere to move forward to, and no backwards, no side. You have instant communication everywhere. So it's a collective consciousness of ESP, of knowing. McLuhan tried to describe that. He said the forward progress of linear societies, visual societies, could now confront the iconic down inside a well, the well of loneliness, of having access to everything instantly. And it's only been intensified for the last 60 years, that process.
Is there a difference between stasis and ascension?
Yes. Ascension would understand the stasis and be able to handle it and then actually be able to move again. When you're ascended, you would not be subject to the environmental freezing, what McLuhan called the stone-aged, turning to stone, society turned to stone. Been that way, you know, started with the collapse of the economy in 1929. That was the beginning of the death of visual space. And we had McLuhan saying that last week. Management took over in 1935. In other words, money became public property. And then after World War II, PR took over. And then the Android meme took over. Those are the phases. Deeper stasis.
What was the thing about the stone?
Pre-literate, pre-industrial societies, Sumeria and that, Mesopotamia, were, they turned to stone. They would kill any inventor that came up with any new technology that would upset the society. They were extreme mediaecologists. You couldn't bring any new technology in to upset the stasis, the deep freeze, the turning to stone. And McLuhan said that we had retrieved the condition of turning to stone, you know, since Eisenhower.
So the difference between ascension and stasis is like the difference between having a heart of stone and a heart of flesh.
No, no, it wouldn't. That brings in emotion, all kinds of matters. It's
a
lot easier than that.
You have a working definition of stasis. You're making a dogma. Just look up the word stasis and tell what it means.
It's almost like an unenvironment, but you're a victim of it. People become very conservative or preserve whatever technology they identify with. I call it a mythic stage. Everybody adopts a mythic stage and becomes fanatic about it. So you have the neocons are fanatic about their stage. The left is fanatic about their meme and their history. The center, the scientists, the alternative medicines, the athletes, the rock musicians, the hip-hoppers, they're all frozen in their little technological niche. There's no attempt to move out of it, to upset themselves. So you have stalemate, which leads to stagflation in the 70s, the incredible stalemate. You hear it in Washington, everywhere, globally. It took a new situation like ION to break us out of the stasis of the stalemate, the frozen, the return of the Stone Age, all those terms that McLuhan saw deeply. He was not for the stoning of people. He said, we got to figure out a way to get through this. And the first thing was, let's turn off TV as an environment and get our bearings. But no one did that. And then it was up to me to solve the problem after McLuhan died. And I did. I solved the problem. Joyce said he was the greatest engineer. He was just quoting me of myself. You know, he said, I squared the circle, blah, blah, blah. But we were the first, Dr. Dean and myself, the first dualism to square everybody. And we are reaping the benefits tonight.
You lost that cubic cube.
That's the beginning. When art lost its perspective, it went multi-locational. That was the first term for cubism.
The Nielsen rating proves that the TV's watching you. You aren't watching
yes.
the TV.
Brian, very interesting thing. I found an unpublished letter. McLuhan said he was talking about the nature of TV in 1941. Now, either it's a misprint. Well, ask ION. Can you bring McLuhan in or speak for him? Did Marshall see a lot of the dimensions of this frozen acoustic space and new tactility? Did he see that in the 40s, ION, before we technically had television as an environment?
Sure. He also talked about the computers before there was a nickel's worth of RAM on the planet.
That's an interesting point, Brian.
It was penile and sexual. That everything was suffering from a good dousing of phylactic acid. And
are you saying it was carnal knowledge?
Well, he used it as carnal, yes. The math.
Yeah, that's The Mechanical Bride, Brian. That's the title of his book, first book, The Mechanical Bride.
The math was a mess.
That's true. He was quite upset with his fellow Catholics not understanding what they were doing in their math.
That bred across into all lines, and then it became a way to make it personal and just for him because it wasn't working in mass. It was messing up in mass. It was a mess.
It became personal for him.
Only.
Did McLuhan get his information from going into other worlds, ION?
No.
How did he know what he knew?
Yes, Bob.
He's working with me, Eliza. One of me.
Is that
we
so,
that, the 1911 Bob. Remember, the 1911 Bob, you know, mapped out this whole trajectory of the holy offices and made them all famous, Zappa, LaRouche, McLuhan.
Besides, Bob fathered Eric, anyway.
Bob fathered Eric? Come on, you weren't supposed to ever bring that up, I. You fucking can't trust ION.
Don't ask us. Ask Corinne. We don't know that.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yes. And if Mary finds out this, we're in trouble again.
It was a very dark night.
Marshall was working on his PhD.
There was some PhD in going on.
I found higher and deeper. I dropped in with Peter Drucker. Drucker distracted Marshall, and I went to work.
One lesbian sex scene, yeah.
Yeah, Carolyn helped a little bit in there, too. Carolyn, the closet
Yay.
Lesbian.
Yay.
So, Eliza, what were you going to say about stasis?
It's a period or state of inactivity or equilibrium.
So you go back to your question, finally, it only took 43 minutes, that what's the difference between stasis and ascension? Well, you can be in a process of ascension in a stasis capacity. Well, we might say that when you fell, you went into a stasis until you come back into your place of power. But maybe not. Is it that? No. Can you be ascending and be in stasis? Apparently, you all have been doing it for a very long time. We just don't know why.
I asked Bob if there's still some type of space, and he said there is no more space and time. What would you say there is then?
You got a problem with that question, ION?
Disenchanted comes to mind.
Disenchanted if there's no space. Are you accusing Roxy of being disenchanted?
No, maybe it's like we are free of that illusion of space.
Okay.
Do you mean we're disenchanted with where we find ourselves currently and we're ready to move on from it?
Sometimes.
Yeah, if we ask about we and generalize, he can always say sometimes for, you know, always be a general answer. So we got to figure out how to not ask things that create general propositions. Because nothing fits in general way.
It's a basic sense without metaphor or allegory.
Well, McLuhan saw that the electric environment was really pervasive. It was a million years of evolution in a few seconds when radio came in the 20s. He said, you cannot have a physical body when you engage the electric environment. That was a real strong percept he had. Nobody had that percept as much as he did.
What does that mean? You can't have a physical body engaged in an electronic environment. What's that mean?
It means right here, where are you, Brian? You can't describe fully where you are now and exchanging communications. You can think.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Where physically is this conversation happening?
Yeah, where? Where is this, Brian? You cannot pin it down where it is. Not in the 3D world.
We're in the circuit.
It's in my bedroom. That's where it's at.
No, you're here in my room, Brian. Your voice is in my room and in everybody else's room, so you're not limited to your bedroom.
You're right, I'm not.
Now try to visualize that.
Visualize what?
Where is your body if it's not just in your room?
I just told you where it was at. It's in my bedroom.
No, it isn't. You are everywhere, Brian. That's what you don't perceive. You are dumb. You are stupid, Brian, if you don't get this.
It's figurative or non-literal.
It's literal. I'm not talking. Fuck it. I just try to explain your literalness.
So no matter where Brian is, he's still stupid.
Yes, he doesn't see through the stages. He doesn't see through the
literal.
He doesn't see the lampstand.
Being startled by your body.
You are in the lampstand right now, Brian.
You don't even know what a lampstand is.
Yes, it's this present environment, which you can't visualize. And until you visually get the unvisualizableness of it, then you're a dummy in the 19th century. You're stuck. You're perceptually not clued in. And you and 4 billion other people are in
the same boat. So explain it then. I'm not in my bedroom, where am I?
Okay, here's what McLuhan said to that. No, look, if I had said figurative, I don't mean that. Brian, McLuhan said physics was trying to explain it, artists of the 20th century explaining it, all the cultural phenomena of the 20th century were attempts to illustrate it, and they all sort of were 60% successful, but because they didn't know that that's the point of what McLuhan was seeing, they did not understand, so they did lousy interviews. They didn't know what to say. So McLuhan was explaining everybody else's artwork and science and everything they were doing in a way that no one else got, and he got it.
That was a whole bunch of words, but you didn't answer my question. If I'm not in my bedroom, where am I?
You are nowhere.
You're going to give me the super angel business that you're everywhere all the time.
Yeah, use that. If that works for you, you're a super angel.
No, that's just your terminology.
McLuhan's term. That's McLuhan's term.
Right.
Okay, if you don't like that one, what term would you like?
How about one of you is in your bedroom and another one of you is here in the universe with us?
Look, if you got to go there, you just go into, well, you know, if you got to go that, you say, well, then you're omnipresent, omnipotent, omni-this,
omni-that. But you are. You are.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what I'd say. Right.
And if you use the image of your body, 3D image, then that's a less than image. It's not accurate. You can't really image where you are. Finnegan's Wake tried to image it. Look what happened there. Ion just asked me, how can I hear non-physical? The fact that Ion is here is where we've gone into a new dimension, which was anticipated by the electric environment.
So you're saying you can't image what McLuhan was saying. You can't image it.
You could say you can't hear it. If everybody made a noise.
Okay,
right,
so there's two. So which instrument would one use to perceive that reality.
It's figurative.
Ian, you said to be literal. Why are you talking figuratively now? What are you trying to say?
Brian's position is if it's not literal, it's figurative.
Well, I'm not talking figuratively. I'm talking literally that you can't literalize this condition.
So then
Brian, you're talking figuratively, Brian, not literally. Bob is saying literally we are not our body.
Right, and you're, Brian, saying figuratively he agrees with Bob.
No, and I'd say figuratively is not what I want. I want a literal understanding of the experience. Because you could hang up the phone, Brian, and you're still under surveillance. You're still on the air because the Patriots Bill made everybody be subject to that surveillance. So you never can leave this stasis, this surveillance of you.
Oh, no,
so you're not in your room.
Brian, no. I don't know if you caught it, but Ian gave you the definition for literal, which is
earlier,
taking words,
right.
Yes, taking words in their usual or most basic sense without metaphor or allegory.
Now, this is going to get off a little bit, but when we get into the Bible stuff, and Ion's saying it's very literal. Well, hold on. The printed words that are printed out that we read in the Bible are nowhere close to what Ion says this is. So based on that definition, the Bible is not literal at all.
It's a book.
Yeah, but compare,
it's not literal because it's a book.
Compare literal to figurative, Brian. Figuratively, I'm going back to figure ground. The figure of your body is in your bedroom. That's literally not you. It's just a figure.
Well, what is it then?
It's just a figure of you.
I've got an idea of a probe that might be able to make a breakthrough.
Okay, do it.
There was this idea, this basic McLuhan bilocation thing showed up in a mainstream commercial a couple of years ago that was pretty funny, car commercials where the running gag is this guy from The Office. People might have remembered it from the show The Office. This running gag, it's all about, like, don't touch my car, get your own. And there was one of the installments where the guy's driving down the road and he gets the call on his car phone, and so he hits the little speaker phone thing, and it's his friend that's always bugging him. And the guy's like, I'm touching your car. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm touching it. My voice is touching it right now. I'm inside your car. I'm touching it. You don't like me touching your car. The point is not just that it brought up that basic I'm there touching it, but that the guy at first was saying, like, no, you're not. No, you're not touching it. That's not what I meant. You know, that doesn't bother me. But the guy kept insisting it, and it got to him anyway. Like, the whole being annoyed by touching his car, it worked anyway. By the guy insisting, no, I'm in your car touching it right now, my voice is touching it, it got through to him that anxiety.
Legend just wrote, Brian surfing the metaphors of Bobby's babble. This is stupidity, Legend. We're not talking metaphor here. It's just like Ion's not a metaphor. Ion is a new environment affecting us. Well, Brian's been on the phone all his life, and that's affected him. He doesn't know it. Therefore, Brian was in stasis.
No, I just want to get you to explain what it is you're saying exactly.
I'm trying to say right now, I'm in your room, and you're in my room.
I get
as well
that.
As remaining here.
I get that. Okay, and then let's say we all hang up the phone. Well, then there's the archives, and then you've got everybody that listens to the archives forever and ever and ever, wherever they are. So now you're there in those places.
I think it's better to do the live situation where we are all live interacting, not on recording, with an added dimension of non-physical, which is here. How can we hear non-physical? But we can hear it. And if you imagine a billion people listening to this, Brian, and a billion people could call in and listen,
we'd
be every our information, my words, would be affecting someone all over the world, and you would be in all of us. That is a unique situation. That's beyond what speech could do. Speech couldn't go beyond the valley or 100 feet down the street or something. So here we are communicating, affecting, in a space where our speech is the content. The speech is like the rearview mirror. The membrane we're in is an important fact, and it was first discussed by Teilhard de Chardin. He wrote back in the 50s that electricity was a biological event. So biology means your physical body. So it's a new addition to the biology. The more you perceive that, then you understand why the Gotha's been emptying for 100 years, 150 years,
right.
Because we are beyond the world that the Bible describes. We're beyond anything that anybody wrote about, and we're beyond what people could say is happening.
Well, see, if you get, I've always thought that as these technologies keep evolving, if you will, I always pictured it, it's like we're using these technologies that are this device that we use in the meantime till we get back to God. It's like this phone, like what we're this whole conversation that we've been having is just one small example of this process of getting back. But we're using devices, you know, we're utilizing devices, the chip body, the electronic environment, if you will, to allow us to do things that we're going to be able to do without them when we get back.
And the question would be, would we keep these technologies if we can do this other stuff? Because going to parallel worlds is pretty good, but you go to a lot of parallel worlds when you're watching television or the computer just by the data that's coming into your mind. You know, you're shifting different scenarios. If I went to another world, I'd be stuck in that world until I left it. Very slow and tedious. So would we keep this technology, since in a way it's faster than the old occult knowledge of moving to world to world?
The problem with this whole thing is that until you come to that place, you don't know it. The reason media ecology has to be here to tell you that there are other worlds that you're going to is you're still going to the other worlds, but figuratively you don't know what it is that you're getting. It's language that involves words that deviate from their precise definition in order to achieve a new, altered, or more complicated understanding through overstatement, understatement, comparison, multiple means.
I agree with that.
Not only gets to another
so
world.
So explain that last sentence. That's good because you're... The words we use in language, like if we use a certain word, it could have 15 different definitions. So it gets right. So it could get I don't know if you would use the word defiled or
It's making linguistic cultural reference. It's always when we say another word, we mean through overstatement, not this one.
There is a delay in our perception in how we decode what we... Is this going to change? Are we going to be in the past always, or are we really going to decode everything instantly?
Pragmatic.
It's going to be pragmatic? Is that an adjective, or it's a action? Pragmatic.
It'd be like a standard pragmatic model. What Rox is talking about.
Have we experienced it yet?
You will soon.
Did McLuhan see that condition coming?
No, you hadn't invented it yet. He will.
He will, but have I invented it yet?
Yes, of course. You're going to update, Marshall. You'll find the lost letter that's going to be written that hadn't been written yet. You'll find the lost letter that proves your point, because you're telling him now, then, that now was then, that was the thing to go. Otherwise, there was no Guten in the Gutenberg galaxy.
So that is how you understand us? Like, sometimes you start answering before we end the question. You already know? Mm-hmm. We're going to know? And if this was happening to Ruth, that she is, you say, faster?
She's special.
But is she manifesting a condition that you're talking about, Ion, for all of us?
Non-figuratively.
That means literally.
Well,
you are
conforming
saying,
or limiting to the simplest, most obvious meaning. Okay.
Hello?
Greetings, Earthlings. Greetings.
How you guys doing?
Go ahead. Stop fucking around.
Get it wet and stick it in, either way.
I'm trying to practice the relax and loud. I'm wondering how to make this process go quicker.
9 millimeter to the base of the skull.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
Get hollow points if it's not going to be an open casket funeral.
Is this Jim talking or Jonathan? Jonathan?
Yeah. I've just been doing really good, and I'm just trying to get the relaxation.
We're not asking how you're fucking doing. Pursue the topic.
I already, that's all I needed to ask. I'm sorry. That's just one
question. No.
Well, what do you make of his answer? You're trying to relax a lot. Would you rather shoot yourself or attempt suicide another calmer way?
Let's say it another way. If you're having to work this hard to get relaxed and allow, maybe you're missing a little part of it. If relaxed and allow shouldn't be a difficult, that should be the slack way, the version.
You already are a lazy person, Jonathan. It's just laziness, relaxing and allow.
Have you heard the idioms?
No, he hasn't bought any recordings yet.
Then you probably got relaxed and allow down pretty fast.
All right.
Relax and allow is being lazy, Jonathan, which you are, so you're already doing it.
There's a recording that goes into it in a little more detail. If you really want to relax and allow, you won't care how to do it.
Gotcha.
You don't have us. You wish you did, but you don't.
See, Jonathan, the non-physical becomes a creator, and he's just a salesman. He's just trying to get you to buy stuff to send Bob more gold.
Bob gives it right back to you anyway. So
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Sometimes when I'm listening to some music, I have a very wonderful feeling. Is that my physical melting with you, or what is that?
It's you connecting to the best part of physical.
Physical, not non-physical. Connecting with physical. That's part of the physical. Very important point, people.
It's
what's physical?
The essence of coitus.
Coitus,
if Brian doesn't know, he's in his bedroom and he has
right.
Erection.
Yeah, is that physical? Yeah, if I'm in my bedroom and that's figuratively
stop,
the physical.
Stop. If Brian is in his bedroom, but he doesn't know he's in his bedroom, and he has an erection, and he has an orgasm, did he come in his bed?
Not since the Patriot Bill. It's being recorded. It's being taped. The television
literal?
Is watching him.
Is that literal or figurative? Is the orgasm literal or figurative? There's a quiz, people.
It's literal to me.
Okay, then your bedroom is literal to you because it's where it occurred. So past tense, there had to be a bedroom before there was an orgasm in order for you to come in it.
Right. So what's that have to do with
that? Well, we're trying to catch you up here. We're now going to apply those words into the sequitur that it says there's no time. So now, if there's a world, you get to say the bias and the basis of that world's application. And that's why the question, why you're querying a bit.
So it would be because of
amplitude.
Triangulation.
Well, amplitude, the frequency point of your knowing. Because your knowing comes and goes, but yet then you knew, and then you know you knew, and you knew you knew, and you wanted to know.
Right.
You knew.
And the amplitude is?
How tight the frequency is. Pardon.
Thought that was a period, how tight it
how
was.
How ascended you are.
Well, we don't like ascended that way, because you already are to us.
Amplitude is the peak of the wave. It's the top of the wave, but how tight or how far apart is, that's the period, right?
Excellent. But the point is the amplitude affects the period.
the period is the time element. There's not one.
Amplitude affects the period. That's based on the angle.
Mm-hmm. Pitch. Don't overthink it. That's not difficult. That's not the hard part. The simplest way to do it, we'll go back to the hula hoop with the magic marker rolling it around the wall, and it'll be beautiful, but glib. All we're saying is don't get trapped in the time warp again. And that's the Rocky Horror Picture Show, Bob, if you queued it up.
Aren't there a whole bunch of songs in that movie? Or is there a particular one that you're citing?
Let's
do the time warp again.
Is that Meatloaf?
Let's do the time warp.
Let's do the time warp again.
That's a boring song. You got, how about
Monster Magnet is perfect for the time warp.
The magnet is, did you say?
The Monster Magnet?
Monster
that's close.
Yeah. So just a second ago, Bob, did we or did we not establish that I said my body's here in my bedroom? You said, no, that's not your body. That's not where you are. So explain to me, if that's the case, I'm not here in my bedroom, I'm everywhere, when Zappa says you leave your body, what is he saying? What's he saying the body is that you're leaving?
He's using the language of the hippie culture that he was experiencing in L.A. and satirizing the fact you already were discorporate. The very first image that he held up in Hit Parader magazine when the marketing came out for Freakout in 66, he holds up the headpiece of a phone, whatever you call that old-fashioned thing you'd speak into, and in the wire coming out of it would be in the other hand, and he would show that it was unplugged. He says, I'm speaking to you people who think you're unplugged from the electronic discarded state via the telephone, but you're not. So he put on the very proper image to respond to McLuhan, who was becoming big that year. And so, yes, if you unplug your phone, you will then require discorporation, but you already are discorporating while on the phone. That's why it's kind of satirical the way he sings it. Is that too multi-level for your literal Ohio mind, Brian?
Yes, it is.
Okay, if you want to remain undescended, I'll pass
it. It would be a little bit south of Midway then, yes.
Yeah, Indiana. Damn Indiana. Area 54. Brian's a victim of Area 54, the Wright-Patterson base. But, Carolyn, you try to explain to Brian what he's not getting.
Brian. You're trying to hold on to a physical body when you know that you're dreaming right now, so it's a failed attempt to do something that you can't.
But I can. Let me ask you this, Carolyn. Do you know where you are? Let me rephrase it, because we're just going to go down that same road. Are you having an experience being in the place that you are, in the room, in the house, in Hawaii, on the phone? Are you having an experience?
Yeah, there's my physical body, but then we've got the five bodies, but we've also got the electric environment. And Bob has told this story many times. When I was first on national TV or whatever TV it was,
it was TV Ontario, November 20th or November 22nd, it added up to 22. 1986, your first time on TV, where she ended up, because it was snowed in Ontario, they had 80,000 phone calls in 90 minutes because everybody was stuck inside the home, so they watched Pretty Carolyn. Well, I noticed when the camera first went on to Carolyn, she looked in it, and then she looked away, and she suddenly realized she didn't know what to look at. Or what was she seeing? And I said, there it is. That's the shock when you go on TV. You experience the discarnate state because you have to perform. And you're there, and you think you have to speak and address somebody, and you could just see in Carol's mind she was temporarily confused about what am I talking to? I don't think she was aware of it until when she came home, I pointed out to you, and we watched the tape, and you could see the little weirdness in your eyeball, right, Carol? You can see your temporary confusion at that instant.
I don't know Carolyn's experience at that time, but I would say if she's looking at
the
camera.
Well, she just told you. What's that stupid statement? I don't know. We just told you Carolyn's experience. Wait, take it in. Absorb it.
Well, no. She's on the camera for the first time, so she's by thinking to yourself, do I look at the camera when I'm talking, or do I look at the host while I'm talking? It's not that she's confused.
No, not the host. She was looking at the camera, and she realized the camera was not where her gaze was going. You look at the camera, but it's going everywhere and nowhere, but you're already being seen.
So, Carolyn, while you were talking, did you have the thought, should I be looking at the host while I'm speaking, or should I be looking at the camera while I'm speaking?
They obviously tell you don't look at the camera, look at the host.
And it was
TV
a caller.
101, but so Bob is right. You know, when you look at this empty lens, you think, geez, I'm supposed to be speaking to an audience, and there's this lens, and what does that mean? And it is really the electric environment effect that I was able to experience kind of consciously, which everybody is involved in, but they don't know it. And that's what Bob's trying to get across to you, that when you're on the telephone, you're right here with us in Maui, you're in Berlin, you're in...
I know that, and I get that. What I'm challenging is...
Why challenge it? Why do you take
an adversarial
position on everything, whereas
it's not adversarial, it's just what Bob does all the time. Bob is constantly being an anti-environment. But Bob's quote was, if you're talking on the phone, you don't have a physical body. So I'm going to ask you, Carolyn, based on your senses in your house, wherever you're at, do you experience your body simultaneously while you're talking on the phone?
I think the way I put it, Brian, is your body is not here in my house, but I hear your voice. So I do not see your physical body. So you are here without a physical body. That's the point.
But that's not what you said.
The body.
Well, that's Bob's nodding. Yes, Ian?
The body cannot extend past the preposition at.
That's why the question, the most profound question came in the 60s. Where is it at? Everybody's looking for where it's at, and they didn't know where at was anymore.
But, Bob, Brian says that wasn't the question, so stop typing. And
I'm recording. I'm writing these notes out about what he said.
Right, the notes out.
I have to record and think and perform at the same time.
So, that doesn't mean anything to you, the fact that your voice is here and your physical body isn't, therefore you don't have a body here?
That's not what you said. You said my body's not there. You said my voice is there. So are you saying that the voice and the body are the same thing?
Yes, they're pretty close. Ian says the voice is what we are besides the cell. You can change your form into anything, so your voice is the only thing that's constant, and the cells that go with it.
I get the fact that what you call a discarnate state. I'm doing, you know, back in the day, Bob, I'm having sex with all of you discarnately. You talk that to your girls on the phone, blah, blah, blah. I get all that. You was quoting McLuhan, and I just want to challenge that statement. Now, wait a second. If I'm on the phone, I don't have a body. Well, hold on, I do have a body. I mean, my physical senses, my sight, hearing. Now, we can get into the senses beyond the five senses, touch, taste, sight, smell, hearing. But based on those senses or instruments, I perceive a reality. Okay, and I perceive a physical body based on those senses. And I can perceive this body and talk to you on the phone at the same time. So all I was saying is, well, I don't get that statement that McLuhan's making. If you're talking on the phone, you don't have a body. I'm like, okay, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, Bob, is it enough to say that Brian doesn't have a body here with us? Is that what McLuhan meant?
No.
Brian's trying to say you're saying he doesn't have a body that he's looking at and feeling in his own room.
McLuhan said that he was trying to describe an obtuse, oblique situation. We're trying to point out that this is different than anything before when people didn't have phones, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sticking to any of the words I say. All these words are different ways to prompt you to have the perception of what I'm talking about. I'm not a fanatic about it. I would have killed myself 30 years ago or now. By now, if I was trying to get get through to people this point, but it is something that people need to notice, this subtle change and what it means to all their images of physics and matter and where they think they are. It just becomes an instrument, and they go about getting into trouble because they don't recognize they're not in New York City anymore, and the economy is not based on the bankers in Wall Street, blah, blah, blah. The slight shift that a media makes is what McLuhan defines it, a sensory shift, and it's not an idea. He's saying this is a physical fact. And that's all it is. I like to say it's just a change in the weather. Well, when the weather changes, it affects people deeply. So we're just trying to not make any way of describing it the only way, Brian. I'll do anything to get you to see it. I'll try different ways.
I get that. That
okay,
it
so you got it. All right, you understand, Brian. Forget everything I said. If you get it, then apply it in your life to whatever comes up. When physics starts talking in 1927 in Copenhagen about the quantum mechanics and the weird thing of electron being in two places at once, they're trying to describe in their old physics models what's happening on the radio, that people are in two places at once. And they don't recognize it's happening in their social lives. They think it's happening in some abstraction called matter. And they know Newton doesn't fit anymore. You can apply this point to everything that's ever said in any field.
Let's go back to the statement you just made about physics was trying to figure out when radio came in that,
yes,
hey, these people are in two places or at once, or you are in two places at once. I'm just saying define the two U's.
I don't think it can be defined, Brian. I don't think the verbal language or painting or music, no former chemical body technology can communicate the new situation. That's
okay,
what I'm
going
to say. Communication of the new is a miracle, but not impossible.
So I could say that you are in two places, but I cannot define the two U's that I'm speaking of.
If we agree that if something's happened, then I wouldn't be arguing with you. I'd cooperate with you, try to paint, describe, or sing the situation. You know, I would start to collaborate with you in trying to describe it. If you weren't arguing with me anymore, if you could acknowledge that it's a new situation, and then we're exploring what McLuhan called ignorance, exploring ignorance for discovery. We're all ignorant in how to talk about this thing. No words meet the new situation. Hasn't for 100 years. That's why all the arts became radical. They knew linear narrative explanation did not cover the new instant evolution that happened. And then you don't have to worry. You don't have to buy art. You don't have to follow it. You get what they're trying to show, but you get their problems, and you can come up with your way of trying to express it, preferably with other people.
It's okay, but that's what Brian's asking. The distance between I have a new body and I will have a new
right
body in a
okay
perfect tent. That's when
okay
he knows he's in his room. When he's in his room, he'll have a new body.
Okay, Brian?
That's the ascension. Graves all bursting, saints are shouting, ready to live in paradise.
No, it's not ascension. It's an attempt, Ian. By you, you've been forced to come into the dialogue because this new situation went around non-physical and included it, Brian.
Yeah.
Non-physical was affected by the electric telegraph.
Yeah, it was just a dry fuck.
Before then, it was just a dry fuck. Now they had to come in. Ion, non-physical, this is where I used to predict 30 years ago that the astral plane, which is my term for the non-physical, was being affected by electricity. That predicted that something like Ion, and Sun Ra predicted it, that a voice from another dimension would come and speak to us. Because it had to, because the electric vortex sucked everybody into this new dimension.
You just made a statement that the electric environment affected non-physical. What do you mean by that? Just by allowing non-physical to come through and speak, or what do you mean by that?
There'd be different ways to say it, Brian. Like I would say, yes, electricity got rid of the veil of visual space, so it allowed Ion to speak to us directly. Maybe there's other ways you would say it. It forced non-physical, which was a product of visual space and the veil, to actually not have the veil there so it could see and talk to us. There would be different ways of approaching
it. It predicted non-physical. It sort of ushered it in.
What predicted it?
Electric environment. It was in it.
It triggered
it. It was so close to what non-physical is, the intuitiveness and...
But look, it goes back to when Anna, I think her name was Ann Stewart from Boston, she had a really good question in her private session back in 2010 or 2011. She said, Ian, how much of the guff is emptied? No one had even thought of being emptied. They thought it was going to be emptied. And Ian said it was 80% emptied. So I immediately jumped in with something I'd been thinking about, that, okay, I said, Ian, is it emptied 80% because of the telegraph, and it's been emptying for 150 years? And Ian said, yes. That yes, I hold on to that unless he's going to change his statement now, because we're different people now. But that meant that the electric environment somehow was affecting the death zone where people died into. That's what I've been predicting it. And Anna evoked a situation where, wow, it's 80%. So then we had to ask, well, what's happening to the last 20%? And Ian said, it's like a drain. When the drain is almost empty, it really spins up the last part of emptying. That's what we're going to experience now. The last 20% of a huge speed up of the guff emptying or electric effect happening. So, Ian, would you correct what I'm saying? Add to it or supplement?
Just the vortex. The vortex, 32 feet per second increases at the end.
The vortex. So, can you describe how electricity affected non-physical in some words, which may be inadequate?
A joule to an amp is a watt to a kilowatt.
And how did you, do you bring in the lotus flower in that ratio?
Did not.
Would you or could you?
Yes, but no reason to.
No reason to. Well, when you bring up the lotus flower the next time, we'll relate it to this issue. Then in that context, you might want to say something.
Okay.
But Ion said a joule to an amp is a watt to a kilowatt, so we just got amped up, electric environment amped up, non-physical. Is that correct, Ion?
No.
Amperes for everybody.
See?
No, that's, what does it mean to get amped up? We actually got non-amped. We didn't need amplification. We were there in touch immediately.
We get lit up so that we could see each other.
Yeah, not amped up. We got lit up. I'd go with that.
Doesn't ohms factor into the equation? Isn't there less resistance?
Ohmage is resistance. There is no resistance issue between a watt and a kilowatt.
And there's no resistance between a joule and an amp?
No.
Is this what the electric environment did? It took out the ohmage?
Precisely.
It took out the resistance?
He said precisely, Brian. He said precisely.
Oh. Nice.
We got some good semi-definition there. Not that we require it.
From the demagogue.
Brian.
I do. I require it, Bob.
Yes, you do. You're from Missouri. You need to resist.
I'm in my analytical state right now, Bob, so we got to be analytical.
You know what that is, Brian? That's an American cliche, seeing is believing.
Okay.
Seeing is believing. Seeing is resistance.
He's just looking for the goober gravy.
Brian is or Bob is?
Brian is.
Do you get that, Brian? Since seeing is a form of illusion, and Americans are a society built up in the printing press, an extension of seeing. They are the most individualistic and individualistic resistors to collective merging. So you are being an American when you say what you did say, and I'm saying, yes, seeing is believing. That's ohmage.
Mm-hmm.
That's resistance. Like, you know, America brought in the electric environment, emptied the guff, but American culturally is the least adaptable to the world that the Chinese are good at relating to.
Are we activating other senses? Because it sounds like we're trying to get rid of or get out of or not be boxed in by the, quote,
that
five senses.
But, yeah, and we have to update our perceptions to see through the stasis. So isn't it interesting that in Revelation that America is the Babylon, the great resistor, the great whore, the great beast, because it was built on visual space, and therefore it could not handle the post-dark age, post-visual world that electricity brought in. That's a McLuhan way to interpret what Ion described in the book of Revelation. Do you agree with that, Ion?
Me, thank you.
The country that is first becomes last. it was the first to make the electric environment, you know, with Samuel B. Morse and all the great technology that came out of the United States. It set up a situation where Americans, as a culture, could not take the effect of the wealth that they initiated because of their visual bias. That's a great paradox or a great trick, a cosmic trick by technological evolution on the genius culture that made a big chunk of it.
On their visual bias.
Yeah, so it's like a human who takes the outer road and falls and doesn't do the non-outer road. I don't want to say goes inner, but goes into and retrieves its actual ascended condition without technology. We took the technological route, and we get our comeuppance for doing that. And Ian says, we wanted to do that. We asked to do the wrong way.
So it becomes an unphysical bias.
The condition we get into, Ion, that's a problem, becomes the unphysical bias?
Yes.